Hey there, MythFits. We got bonus content now on MythFits Podcast. Every third Thursday, we're going to be putting out some bonus content. You know all those clips we reacted to and stuff?
Yeah, we're going to be looking at clips. We're going to be deep diving into subjects that we haven't yet covered on the podcast. And we're going to look at the list of weird topics we have for future shows.
This is us just like getting down with all of the craziness that you guys send us. I'm even surprised what you're showing us. If you guys want to access those bonus episodes, you got to go to MythFitsPodcast.com, see all the things that we're cooking up, and become part of the band of MythFits.
Do yourself a favor. Join Weird Club of MythFits.
Hey, MythFits, if you do have kids in the car, we will be talking about some adult themes today. So
earmuffs.
I called him, no answer. I get a call back and it's just silence and it's just like breathing.
God, man, it's like a horror movie.
Yeah, so I was like, oh no, let's go there. He's gonna go dark. He knows that we're on to him.
Welcome, MythFits.
Hey there, MythFits. Tori and I are back for another episode.
Welcome back. Welcome back, you guys.
And hey out there, MythFits, if you do want to become part of the band of MythFits, we have an awesome community that also gets you an early release of the episode, bonus content, no commercials, which is the best part.
Yeah. And pictures of Carrie's feet. Just kidding.
There's not. But you can go to MythFitsPodcast.com and become one of us. One of us.
The world's going crazy right now, right? I feel like the whole world is chaotic. So yesterday, I'm in my balcony, and this woman is walking down the street, and she's holding a satellite radio, and she's like dressed in a nice black dress, and you know she looks very professional. She's got a clipboard, and she's like, "Hi, do you live here?" And I go, "Yeah," and she goes, "Can I talk to you about something? I'm." So-and-so, a council member on, you know, in City Hall. And I went, sure, what's up? She's like, we're trying to come up with an emergency contact system for our city. So if for some reason there's a catastrophic event and the phones go down and the cell phones don't work, these are satellite phones, they'll still work. Like, for example, if there's an explosion in Santa Cruz, we won't be able to communicate. And I'm like, why would there be an explosion in Santa Cruz? Like, it just creeped me out. It was like, do you know something that I don't know?
And also, like, think about when we were younger, like, yes, cell phones didn't exist, but you had your landlines. And at some point, all of our landlines became over the computer. So now it's not like if your cell phone doesn't work because the cell towers are down, you can use your landline. Like nothing works. Like we're back to carrier pigeons. We've almost devolved in communications.
I got a tin can with a string attached to my parents' house.
Nice.
Pull tighter. you're breaking up. You need to pull tighter.
Oh my gosh. We're in such an age of chaos right now in general that I'm wondering if this is just generational, because like when we were kids, we were worried about nuclear war. We were worried about like, is the world going to end? Is TV and MTV rotting our brains? And now this generation, it's like technology, social media and AI. Are they trashing our brains? Like, is AI going to take out the entire structure of humanity so none of us have jobs and it's universe 25 because we've spent our entire life looking for the purpose of work and now there are no jobs. Like there, it seems like every generation has their apocalypse. And I even put this out on social media because I wanted to have this conversation with you, MythFits, about like, are you spinning out about AI as well? Like, is this something that just because I'm in San Francisco and everybody's talking about it, like my friends are pretty coastal. I've got my friend from DC who came to town who's doing stuff on policy and AI. And we just sat there and talked about AI the whole time. Like, what's your concern, MythFits? And Tori, is this something you're thinking about all the time?
I have to say, I'm not thinking about it all the time. I definitely see the dangers. Like, it in the early stages, like Will Smith eating spaghetti. Do you remember those videos?
Right, right, right.
And you're just like, that's hilarious. This is a fun new toy. It looks ridiculous, you know, but you know, I'm having fun. This is fun to play around with. Now, if you've seen the new videos of Will Smith eating spaghetti, it's like, what the heck? The advancement from, you know, within a few years has gotten so great. And that now it's starting to get scary. Like, for example, I just saw a post from William Shatner, and he is trying, there's all these websites about him having cancer, and they people are donating to these websites. And so these people are making money off this fake story. And he just posted about it. And he's like, this is not me. It's AI generated. It's a fake story. I don't have cancer. Do not send money to these. And so now you're starting to see the bad guys, you know, the people who aren't using it for good, do these like just, you know, criminalistic acts. And, you know, you're just like, just, can we just be like good people? Let's be better, everybody. Try better.
I mean, I just went to watch, I recommend it, by the way, if this is a concern of yours. I went to watch the AI doc.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just this filmmaker's journey about his anxieties about AI, and he interviews everybody kind of in the space. And like, you know, I won't ruin the movie, but he's going on this journey because he's thinking about his
future. How does it
future.
End? We all the world is, the world's doomed.
We're actually in AI right now. None of this is real. You guys are all actually in the Matrix watching this in your own simulations. FYI. No, so I've been, you know, after that movie, my bestie and I we spent an hour walking and just walking through humanity. There's people over the streets. It's really warm. Just talking about the philosophical implications of AI and what's going to do to us, because we can generate our faces onto anything at this point.
Yeah.
And so it was talking about how in the beginning of Mythbusters, when Photoshop was just starting to be something that people would use to create like images where they would take my face and they would put it on a pornographic image, and it was terrible. Like, you could tell that it was cut and paste onto these pictures. But every time it would happen and it, you know, somebody would send it to me online or I would see it, the story that I was always told was like, well, everybody knows that that's fake, so just get a thicker skin. Like, mm-hmm. This is part of celebrity, get a thicker skin. So it was like, I slowly just got a thicker and thicker skin. Technology got better and better and better. And, you know, I, as an adult and having been a woman coming up through media, just, it's something like, nope, you just got to deal with it. You've got to figure it out. You need to be stronger. But now I have a daughter. And she started getting sent deep fake AI porn with my face on it, right?
Whoa.
And, you know, at first the eyes are crossed and you have six fingers and whatever, but the fact that her, you know, friends or boys or people that she knew were sending this to her, you know, we had to start having this conversation, like, it's not real. But what are those implications to women? Like, we can't just keep telling women, get a thicker skin. Like,
and men too. I mean, I don't think this is just a female.
True.
I don't think this is just a woman man issue. I mean, like, it could be damaging. For example, you know, the example that I brought up, William Shatner, like, I feel like we're all vulnerable to these kinds of weird attacks.
When we were having this conversation and the AI got better and better, and now she's a teenager, she started telling me examples of how she's heard of girls getting bullied because you can nudify anybody or make this porn about anybody. And boys were bullying a girl in school because they had made this of her. And though everybody knew it was fake, she still felt humiliated and didn't want to be in school. And there's so many more of these examples that are happening. And so, you know, as a parent, you're a parent, like, that feeling of just wanting to protect your child is so immense. And I felt overwhelmed and scared and just helpless, right? So always the antidote to anxiety is action, right? So this led me to start going down some rabbit holes and trying to figure out what people are doing. And that's kind of what led me to our guest today. Is I was watching Paris Hilton testify for the Defiance Act, which is an act that around you know, these deep fakes and you know, non-consensual pornography. And I just got really, really interested in it. And so I reached out to her people to ask about it, you know, like maybe she'd want to come talk about it here, but ended up connecting to her media company, who then were like, oh my God, you know, you need to talk to is Lori. She's heavily involved in all of this, the Defiance Act and getting legislation across, because I mean, we're at an inflection point right now, right? Like, what if we could rewind, go back to the beginning of social media and put some rules around it that made us not be anonymous or made us all like, you know, like, yeah, what if we could do that? And we're in that place with AI right now.
No, it's like Pandora's box. It's already been let out. Like, I think we're on a roller coaster ride and it'll be interesting to see where it ends up. But like to go back and try to police it or put controls, even if you did do that, there would still be people who could hack that and get around those regulations and those, you know, those breaks. But I know, like, after you told me we were going to have her on, Lori on as our guest, I started checking out her stuff. And oh my, like, the topics she covers in technology is so cool. And I'm really excited to have her on just to find out more about kind of what we're headed for and just kind of how she got into this whole realm of technology. I mean, her topics are insane. Like, they range from, there's like a real cyborg, a human cyborg. She did this other one where she created a bot of herself. After she dies, she's going to be able to still communicate with her loved ones. I mean, it's weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I wanted to bring her on so badly is I ended up on the telephone with her and just, I'm obsessed with her now. Like, she's been around
technology.
Are
you stalking her again?
I'm stalking another person I'm interested in. She's just been around technology since, you know, decades ago and watched the evolution as we went through social media and now into AI. And I disagree that we are completely at Pandora's box. It's out now. If I were the president, as a world leader, I feel like I would get all the other world leaders and we would take all these AI geniuses and just lock them in a room with ethicists and child development experts and just be like, figure it out. We're going to do global rules here the same way we did with nuclear weapons. Because that AI doc, the reason they were making that about AI and the possible apocalypse of the world is because after Reagan watched the movie The Day After, which profiles what would happen if nuclear war happened and we're all screwed, he was so depressed that that's when he reached out to Gorbachev to be like, let's come up with some rules of engagement. Let's disarm everybody. Like, let's make it so that, you know, when you and I were worried about that happening to us, like, let's figure that out. And I think people just need to pay attention now, and we need all of our leaders to be able to come to the table and protect us from the possibilities of AI. And we all, like, everybody, the whole world has to get together to protect us.
But the problem is everybody is trying to beat everybody else, that they're just like full speed ahead. We are going to win. And so it's like, I don't think anybody is concerned. They're like, we just got to win. And then once we get there and we've won, then we make some, put some regulations on it. That's just, I feel like that's the way we are headed right now.
I absolutely see that. I see that. But I also think, like, we're all humans and we're all scared for humanity. And though everybody's trying to get there first, so they're the ones that can protect us.
The way the world's going right now, it feels like a lot of people aren't concerned about humanity. They're just like, we got to make as much money as we need to. Anyway, this is getting dark. Maybe we should transition away.
That's why this conversation is really, really important, because we do have to get to that point of...
I know, but
if there's no hope and there's no optimism, there's no reason to try. So we need to keep having this conversation so everybody has enough hope and agency to be able to get us there. And I think for me, one small way that I'm acting is trying to be a part of this conversation around, like, deepfake porns with people like Lori, so that we can talk about protecting kids, because that's for me, I feel like
the reason
I'm protecting the future is to protect kids.
I agree. But I mean, you know, the best way to protect yourself is don't put yourself online. Like, that's it. If they don't have photos of you from online, they can't create these images.
Well, your baby is still young and you're going to see how hard it is to keep your teenager offline. It is virtually impossible. All right, MythFits. Here's why I'm really happy we have Lori Siegel on. Her career as a technology correspondent on CNN was really amazing. She was interviewing tech titans, hacker outlaws, and exploring big tech to reshape the world. She has started her own company and her own brand called Mostly Human, which is an amazing podcast. If you haven't already checked it out, please go there. But we're going to ask her all about our future and make Tori and I feel better. When we come back, let's talk
or
to Lori.
Or worse. Let's hope she can cheer us up. Those are some cool sunglasses, Carrier.
Yeah, they're good. You know what I always loved about Warby Parker's, you can try a bunch on to figure out the ones you like. Did you know, Tori, that Warby Parker has prescription glasses starting at $95, quality frames at a price that actually makes sense?
Warby Parker gives you quality and better looking prescription eyewear at a fraction of the going price.
Well, Tori, if you want to get a pair, their virtual try-on is a total game changer. You can literally try on glasses from your phone before you even buy them.
And the cool part is you can buy a pair and they give a pair away. Over 20 million pairs distributed to people in need.
Our listeners get 15% off plus free shipping when they buy two or more pairs of prescription glasses at warbyparker.com/mythfits.
That's 15% off when you buy two pairs of glasses at warbyparker.com/mythfits.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support the show and tell them the MythFit sent ya. Hey, MythFits, welcome Lori Siegel. She is somebody I am newly obsessed with because between her career through CNN and her new podcast, Mostly Human, I am just really excited to have an expert who's been through the entire evolution of tech and talked to every titan and has this just amazing base to talk about all the things that are driving Tori and I crazy. Our curiosity about all of this is going crazy. So thank you for joining us today.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here with y'all. I'm such a fan too. So we just, you know, it'll be a love fest. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Mutual admiration society for reals. I mean, I grew up in Silicon Valley and I've always been really interested in watching tech. And it has been really exciting to see things change so quickly. And I felt like the vibe used to be, you know, how do we make the world a better place through tech? And everybody was, you know, just kind of on this track to be disruptors. But at the same time, it was very optimistic and positive. And there's been a bit of an arc where I've gone from super excited about it to a little bit fearful. And the reason that, you know, I came to you in the first place is because of your investigative work on deep fakes. I would love you to kind of tell the story of how you took down Mr. Deepfakes.
Over, you know, one of the things I did, and I would say like first iteration of my career was I when I was covering technology at CNN, is I did a lot on something called non-consensual pornography. It was like the slang was like revenge porn, where it's like a woman, this happened to many women, but any victims in general had a photo of themselves taken and put on the internet without their consent. And there were these websites devoted to just shaming women of like, so it was like an ex would post a nude and say horrific things and put them on these sites where thousands of people would go to them. And I just remember at the time being like, how are there these sites that are literally devoted to shaming women without their consent? And it was all sorts of messed up stuff. Like, you actually, to protect yourself, you had to get the copyright of the photo, which meant you had to send like your nude photos to the government to copyright yourself. And I was just like, all of this stuff is like, none of this. It was like, none of this makes sense. I remember the headline at CNN that it was like, copyright your boobs to protect yourself. And so like, I think I've always kind of started some of my coverage from a place of, wait, that doesn't feel right.
What?
Like, what? There was a big site called Mr. Deepfakes where literally thousands of women had their likeness taken and they created sexually explicit deepfakes. The person behind it was anonymous for 7 years and created sexually explicit deepfakes of women without their consent. So your first Google search, if you were one of these women on the site, would be your name and then some horrific pornography headline. The first thing if someone wants to hire you, they see when they Google your name. And, right. And it was just, it was thousands of people. So 18 million people were going to the site on a monthly basis. 18 million.
18 and million. 18
it was
million.
Crazy. And I'm like, how does this exist? Again, it was like, wait, how does this exist? Why does yeah. this happen?
Right.
And it was also a platform, right? So it was like,
yeah,
it was almost like you could say, oh, I want this woman doing this with this and I'll pay you to make it. So it wasn't just a website. It was a platform where people exchanged
money.
It was
a service.
It was a service, Tori. I mean, it was crazy. And I was like, this shouldn't be allowed to happen. Why is this allowed to happen? And a lot of these women would try to get this taken down and they couldn't even contact anyone. This was happening in the dark. And then, of course, when you try to explain to the police officer that this is happening or other people, they're like, what are you talking about? AI, nude, manipulation? What? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I set out, you know, like Liam Neeson style from Taken, where I'm like, you know, I have a lot of friends and a certain set of skills. It's like I have a certain set of skills that enables me to do this. So we set out to find Mr. Deepfakes. And I put together a team, some folks I had with me from 60 Minutes and some really good guy cybersecurity hacker types who have kids and just they're like, yes, yeah. They're like, okay, this is a massive threat. We're thwarting threats from Russia and China, but this is a huge threat and no one's talking about it. And in that process of trying to find Mr. Deepfakes, I really just wanted to educate people on why this site should not exist and what it represented should not exist. So it was a pretty wild journey, I will say.
How did you get the FBI involved? Like what you say you have a specific set of skills that allows you to take this down. What was your first steps? Like, how did you go about?
I did two things. The first thing I did was I went to the internet. I'm a storyteller. If I at the end of the day, my skill set is telling a story of why these things matter and translating it. So I went to the internet and I said, this is one of the most dangerous men on the internet. And here's why you need to know his name before it's too late. And then I laid it out and I explained the story of deepfakes, but I did it from a really human perspective and why that mattered. And I said, and I made a call out to my community and I said, if you have any information, I will take any leads. I know a lot of tech people follow me. Please, because my thing was, Mr. Deepfakes was so dangerous, not just because he was one man behind this site, but it was because he was teaching a new generation of men.
Yes.
Or users how to deepfake people. There were training manuals on the site being like, I want to learn how to put, I'm not even going to say the word, on this woman's face, you know, through how do I do this? And like, oh, here's the data set. I mean, it was so gross. And so Mr. Deepfakes had created an army of Mr. Deepfakes. And so I thought to myself, well, we have to create our own army. And so we all started the signal chain. This is like super in depth, but I feel like your audience is really
our audience is very smart. Yeah,
I love that. That makes me so happy. So we start the signal chain and we have all sorts of kind of ops going and we have like different leads and whatnot and they're finding stuff and then we're chasing it down. But then I got a tip in my inbox on TikTok, which I immediately didn't even really know. I'm not like a massive TikTok user and like I didn't really realize I had like this other inbox. I'm getting a pedicure and I look and I find I have this other inbox on TikTok and this guy who has 19 followers is like, I know the identity of Mr. Deepfakes. And I'm
what?
I was like, okay. You know, and I look it up.
Real?
I'm like, oh my God. Like I've been searching for this guy for a year. This is like a man I believe to be one of the most dangerous men on the internet. He's been anonymous for 7 years. People have tried to find him. So it's the internet. I'm like, is it Mr. Deepfakes contacting me and messing with me? Like what is happening?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I look up the company. It's called Sedenti. It has like 19 followers on TikTok. But it's based in the Netherlands and I'm going back and forth with the guy. They do, you know, digital identity protection. And so I'm like, okay, I could actually see that. You know, maybe there's an issue with some of the people that are trying to protect their identities because they've been on Mr. Deepfakes. And so maybe there's a there. And so I end up talking to him. It seems really credible. We get on a call, and the next day he shows me a whole dossier of, like, literally, I would say it was like a 17-page dossier that had all of these different data points dating back that really pointed to this being one person, and crazy stuff like, you know, a 4chan name that connected to a YouTube channel, like all sorts of stuff. And they did a lot of reverse engineering and all sorts of really interesting things to get to this point. We really dug in, and I got his phone number, the guy we believe to be Mr. Deepfakes,
no way.
And I called him. Yeah. I know. I was like, I guess I'll just call, you know?
Let me know what. First step. I mean, you're already Aaron Brockovich meets all the president's men. This is going to be the best made-for-TV movie.
Like,
go on.
Makes poor life decisions and doesn't think twice, right? This is, by the way, before I had my one-year-old. So, like, I feel like it's made me a little bit, I'm crazy in different ways now, but I was always pretty crazy. And so I called the number, and I called him. No answer. I get a call back. And it's just silence. And it's just, like, breathing. And it's me.
It's like a horror movie.
The man we believe to be. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, and I think a normal person would be like, oh, that's pretty freaky. Like, I think I'm going to, like, take a step back. And I'm like, oh, no, let's go there. He's going to go dark. He knows that we're on to him. Like, we're probably the first people that have contacted him. Wow. I think another journalist had been working with Sedenti, and that's why, and we were the only ones talking about it online. So I was like, I knew that he was probably going to go dark pretty quickly. And so, you know, fast forward, and I want to go like through all of it, but fast forward, we ended up in Canada. We ended up being able to track exactly where he worked. We ended up figuring out that the man behind this massively influential deepfake site was actually working as a pharmacist at a hospital helping people. That he was a new father.
Crazy.
And it was just, and the whole thing, I mean, honestly, it was really sad. Like, I think the thing that was so crazy to me about learning who he was and really digging in and calling friends and family and all sorts of stuff is that, like, is how ordinary he is. And yeah. I think maybe that's the point of it. He didn't have to be the sophisticated tech guy to build out a site that caused so many women so much pain for so many years. And I think that's why the story was so important to me. Like, this technology, if democratized, can do so many horrific things. And so we just can't stand for that world. Like, I love technology. I just don't want that version of it. And so, you know, we had some crazy moments. I mean, he evaded us at the hospital. I was speaking to his back. When I said, I want comment, I would like, you know, you to comment. I have strong belief that you're behind Mr. Deepfakes. I don't understand how a father could be. I said all that, but I spoke to his back when he walked in. And I remember him looking at me with so much disdain. And I just thought to myself, like, this is either, he's not going to speak to me. This is either the end of the story or it's the beginning of the story. And so, you know, my idea was like, okay, he's not going to shut down the site. Like, we're going to have to build out an army to make sure we can shut down that site. And the one other little snippet from the road that was crazy is, like, all of us were going to be moms in the field. Mm-hmm. And so I had my producer with me who was 7 months pregnant at the time. And we were all women, you know, all of us were, it was a group of women really kind of fighting for this, which I think was, you know, I look back on it and it just wasn't random. You know, we just cared about it. We just knew the stakes of it coming from a different perspective. And when he left the hospital, we weren't able to find him. He went out, I think, the back, like, we wanted to try to get more comment. And we ended up.
Can we just take a minute? Like, you went and confronted this guy. Like, that seems very dangerous to me. But brave. Totally brave. But I mean, I'm just like, the fact that you found this guy and then we're like, let's go confront him. Let's get in his
face.
Yeah,
there's like a part of my brain that it's like a chip that could be missing sometimes of, like, danger. It's like, right. My husband, we have like a little cabin in the woods and I'm like afraid of the dark. And then, like, I go and, like, embed with militia groups. And, you know, like, my husband's like, you have a the one thing I would say from the field is, like, when we couldn't find out his home address for whatever. Hilariously, Canada seems to have privacy laws that just don't apply.
The irony.
Like, there's too much. There's too much irony in it. But we, after figuring out he was a father, because I saw a car seat in his parents' home and a red car that was in his profile online. And so I saw the red car and his parents at his parents' home. And I looked in the window and there was a car seat. And I thought, there's no way this guy could be a dad. And we found out. I called the place where he worked, and they said, oh, he's back from paternity leave. I was like, I was like, no need to get in touch. I'll be there tomorrow. You know, like, don't give him heads up. And so we ended up calling Babies R Us, and I'm sure your audience knows like social engineering. So like, we just called Babies R Us. My pregnant producer at the time was like, why don't you try to see if he's registered? And I'm like, what? It's like, wow. Baby registry? And we called Babies R Us, and we have the recording taped where we asked for his wife's name, nothing, his name, nothing, emails, nothing. Then she said, give me his phone number. You know, and I was asking just for a registry. I wasn't telling her. I was like looking for a deep fake porn kingpin. And she's like, oh yeah, David, here's his address. And that's how we ended up at his home. So it's like,
you're so interesting. You're like a mastermind. You
know? She's Batman.
So Carrie, before you started taking Cheers and you would go on a big drinking binge, how would you feel the next morning?
You know, Tori, I go out a lot because I don't have a small child. So I spend a lot of time being social these days. And I got to say, it was a lot easier when I was younger. I get a hangover like that now. So I pregame so hard. I'm like prepped. I've got my purse is filled with like little Cheers packets. Take it after your last drink or right before bed. It works while you sleep. They claim wake up feeling at least 50% better. Or your money back.
After 30, your body processes alcohol less efficiently. The DHM in Cheers smooths out the brain's rebound while you sleep. The cysteine helps your liver clear out the toxic byproducts alcohol leaves behind.
Take Cheers Restore after your last drink or before going to bed and wake up feeling at least 50% better or your money back.
For a limited time, our listeners are getting 20% off the entire order by using code MITFITS at cheershealth.com.
Head to cheershealth.com and use code MITHFITS for 20% off. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them the MITHFITS sent you.
Do they know our audience or what? Bunch of drinkers.
This is, okay, so this is what, for me, is so powerful and important about what you are doing. Is you are bridging between tech, which I feel like is like Tori was talking about, Pandora's box, which feels a little out of control and all just trying to win and get to the end and develop the technology. And you're bridging that to humanity because all of the people creating the tech are humans and how it's affecting humans. So putting your podcast out there where your first interview was with Dr. Becky, with Good Inside, which is all about children and advocacy. And then your second interview is with Sam Altman. I feel like what you're doing right now is what the world needs. So, I mean, it's so hard to prepare our kids at this point because I think it's, you guys have little kids. My kid's a teenager. So stuff is always, this has already been deployed on her and she's already been the victim of the addiction. So I think it's really easy for Sam Altman to be like, just don't give it to your kids. I'm going to tell you from the get, they are smarter than that. They will get around that. You think you can just not give it to them? They're going to have their Finsta fake Insta accounts. They're going to get that technology. I remember there were firewalls in the fifth grade when we were all going into Zoom that like two of the boys in class got around them and showed all of the kids how to get around the protections that were put onto their computers. God. So, like, I think it's really easy for all, you know, everybody to be like, just don't do it. But if we don't regulate it in some way, we have learned from social media that these companies are not going to regulate themselves. So, personally, I mean, I'm wondering, do you think that the action that all of us can take for our anxiety is to push for legislation or to, like, where can parents go to relieve some of this, I don't know, spiraling AI existential fear.
But it's I'm curious to hear this answer because it feels like we are on this race. Everybody is every country is racing to get to the finish line and be the winners of AI. That they're not looking at the danger. They're just like, we got to get to the finish line. We got to cross the finish line, and then we'll come up with ways for, you know, to guard, you know, put up some guardrails.
You know, it's so interesting to hear both of you talk like this. Like, I'm flashing back to the interview with Sam. We're talking about, like, children and if, like, you know, will this not create, like, will this be a frictionless experience that impedes their growth? And he said something about, like, how it's a multiplayer game, you know, how the world, like, and children in 2030 are going to have these skill sets and all this. And there's this part of me that it's like, I hear folks in Silicon Valley talk about the race. This is where we went back and forth, like, on the state legislation. Like, you know, we need innovation. We have to move quickly. Like, this is competitive. We don't do it. China's going to do it. But, like, this feels really similar to the conversation we had around social media. And I don't think that ended great. The thing that gives me faith, the thing that really gives me, that makes me think, okay, this is interesting. You know, if you look at the Google Meta lawsuit and the fact just recently, this is like the first time that these companies have been found liable for designing a harmful product. That's a really big deal. And I asked Sam about this and what that would mean for AI companies. And he said society is going to, he believes society is going to hold these companies accountable for the, you know, for the products that they put out into the world. I mean, that's a bit of a dance around of, like, should legislation also do that? Like, society is a pretty general term. But I do think that there is less and less patience and the stakes are higher now. But I would say, to curb anxiety, it is also such a fascinating time. Like, I think that AI is going to create interesting personalized learning curriculums. Once we kind of get to the other side of this, some of these companies are working on really interesting products around this. I think the idea that there are going to be so many interesting medical breakthroughs that the healthcare system can feel really shitty for a lot of people, and that this could actually do something that gives people a little bit more agency. It's going to be, if we do it right, and not one or the other. And so I think that's important. And I think Dr. Becky kind of helped me a little bit with my fears, because I was like, I'm spinning. And I was like, how do we talk to our kids about deepfakes? And I'm like sitting here in my, like, you know, I only have a 1-year-old. So, like, I'm not, please, like, don't ask me for, like, parenting advice for your 13-year-old. I'm going to ask you I'll follow up and ask you that question.
Give me a call. I got you.
Right. And I'm like, how do we talk about this? And this is, do I need to explain to my child that the product is, like, is affirming? And do I need to explain what sycophantic means? And she's like, no. Like, that is not what you need to do. You need, and she explained the same parenting skills of being able to create care and space for your child if they don't make the soccer team is the same parenting skills that you need to be able to apply when something bad happens. Like, if it's deep fake, like, you know, and I thought that was such an interesting thing of, like, you got this, like, the way that you parent and you hold space for your child doesn't change because technology changes. You know, if anything, it just becomes more important. And so that gave me, like, a nice little, oh, okay, you know, I don't have to, you know, tell Charlie that's my son, that the internet doesn't exist, you know, and that he'll never have access and we don't need to live in the cabin. But maybe, you know, it is kind of like our bunker plan, you know, if.
Oh, great. I was just feeling better about everything, Lori.
Tori, if you play your cards right, we could build out the cabin so everyone could, you know.
But don't stop building that bunker.
You know, what I do feel optimistic about is that you are having these conversations, that we are having these conversations, that I believe that as humans, we are all more alike than different. We all have these fears. And I do think that humanity is going to win out the way it always does. I mean, I've definitely had that arc of panic to this point, but because there are people like you that are actively trying to create legislation and rules, and I think a lot of us want to be a part of this, and the fact that you are getting this word out is what gives me optimism. So I would love you to tell all of our MythFits, where can they follow your deepfake story? Where can they find you? Where are you in the social network?
That is, first of all, thank you for saying that. That means a lot. And it's so great to be on with y'all. You're so fun. I could talk to you for hours.
I will call you later.
I love it. I'm going to call you too. Just get ready. You can find us at Mostly Human Media on Instagram and YouTube. The podcast airs on iHeart, but you can get it wherever you get your podcasts. But if you want to watch them, and I suggest watching them because it's kind of cool to be able to actually watch people's faces, especially like tech folks, you can watch that on Mostly Humans YouTube. And I'm just at Lori Siegel on social networks. And I also, my goal is to be able to hear folks and their concerns and really have a two-way dialogue. So we set up an email that's hello@mostlyhuman.com. So if folks have thoughts, feelings, want to send us voice memos, want to pontificate on the meaning of life, I don't know, I'm here for it. So any of those places. And we'll have more on the deepfake series coming out in May on Mostly Human Media on our site. So people can check it out there.
Well, now you're a MythFit community as well. You're part
I
of
love
us.
Love it.
And we yeah. all want to come to all you MythFits, go be mostly human.
This has been so interesting. And I've been wanting to get you on just to kind of dissect and examine and explain kind of all the crazy technology that's coming out and kind of what we should do to prepare for it and to protect ourselves for it. So thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
thank you, Lori. I know we've had you for a long time, so we should probably let you go back to making the world a better place.
Thank you. It's so good to be on with you guys.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
Welcome back, MythFits. I hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. Carrie, I'm so glad that you stalked her and got her on the podcast. That was awesome.
She is just fascinating, and she's just had this front row view to technology in such an interesting way. I'm really glad that she broke off from CNN to start her own thing, because this is a really great mission.
And it's so relevant right now, because it's like there's so much stuff coming at us as far as technology and AI. And like for a kid who's brain doesn't fully develop till they're 25 years old, like for them to digest all this and figure it out, I really loved it that she came on and just kind of broke it down.
I'm not sure my brain is fully developed at this point.
I'm gonna say
I feel like I'm learning
probably not
constantly. I mean, this is I feel it almost overwhelmed with the constant glut of information and the way that the world is changing. So it feels really important for us to keep having all of these conversations. And I mean, all the way back from Mythbusters, you and I have always just been really curious people trying to figure things out. And we have even more things to figure out at this point. It's just my brain is melting a little bit.
So this is just a few questions I want to ask you real quick. It's tech paranoia, like things that, do you think this is a good thing, or is this like something we should be terrified of?
Is this a game you have for me? Is this a quick
just
a,
not a game, but it's just something that I was going to ask her, but she was so kind of breaking down these serious subjects that I was like, all right, I'll just wait and then I'll ask Carrie. Okay, ready?
Yes.
Your phone always listening. Is this a good thing? So you get those ads to buy products that you really want, or is this a bad thing?
For me, bad thing. Also, the fact that I do have a Google Home, and in the middle of the night, it lit up for no reason. And I was like, is it listening right now? Was I talking in my sleep?
It's like a poltergeist.
I do not like things listening all the time. And I turn off all of my apps. I don't let them in the background.
Yep. I had a friend, his niece worked, I don't know if it was Google or one of the big tech companies. And she says, always close out of your apps because they'll listen. But I feel like even when they're closed out, if your phone is on, it's going to hear what you're talking about.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't read all of the fine print of all of those privacy policies that are updating constantly. Like, I feel like every single day I'm seeing something on Instagram. It's like, hey, did you know that the new update has made it so that they can look at everything you do for the rest of your life? And I'm like, what? I got to turn off another thing?
Yeah, I read those. That's kind of a pastime of mine. I like
you read the privacy policies?
I like reading. Yeah,
I can see that.
All right, next one. AI giving better advice than your friends. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I have done some extensive playing with AI, and I don't think it's giving better advice than my friends because my friends have known me for so long and they know my idiosyncrasies, whereas I feel like the AI is just trying to gamify the right answer.
Well, the AI is like, you're the best. What are you talking about? Of course you were right and they were wrong. They're idiots. That's why we're best friends.
I do feel like some of my friends did not call me out early enough when I was in bad relationships and everybody knew it. And not one person was like, Carrie, are you sure? Are you sure? So maybe AI might be better.
Right.
You're right, Tori.
Okay.
Maybe I'm convinced.
All right, this is the last one. Robot coworkers. They never sleep and they don't complain. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, honestly, if I piss off my robot barista, it's not spitting in my coffee. So I think robots can be incredibly useful in the workplace as long as they are helping us humans be more humans by taking the crap work, like, you know, running errands that I don't want to run, but not doing the cool things that I want to do. I want AI to do my laundry, not my artwork.
All right. So for you, it's a positive. We're cooked.
Yeah, we're not cooked. We're just in transition.
You know what? It's not going to be a quick cook. It's like a frog in boiling water. You slowly turn up the heat, and as the water gets hotter and hotter, the frog won't jump out until it's too late, and then he's boiled, and that's, I feel like, is what happens.
I do enjoy a hot tub. I really love a hot
tub.
We're
all getting slowly cooked. All right.
Is it time for a fan question, Tori? I feel like we need to turn this around. Our AI conversation has gone deep, deep, deep.
And Carrie, just so you know, this question came from the band of Mythfits. He is an official member. All right. This question comes from Todd. Grant was revered for all the various machines and quote unquote robots that he made. What were your favorite inventions that Grant did for Mythbusters or White Rabbit Project?
Okay, so I know Grant's favorite invention, and I think it might be mine as well, was the sword-swinging robot that also was the bat-swinging robot that was also the slapping robot. I loved the utility of that and the fact that it became so many other robots and how excited he was about it and how freaking dangerous that thing was.
Yeah, that was... and we also used it for Curve or Bullet, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was one of those machines that once it was built, it was like, hey, I know, let's dust that off and repurpose it. So that was, yeah, good question. Good answer.
What was your favorite, Tori? Is it the same one?
I'm going to agree with you. Yeah, I like it. I love the fact that we could reuse something over and over because it just made the build faster. You know, it was like if we had to start from scratch again, it was always like it just took longer to get to testing. And so the fact that we had that machine at our in our resources, that it was just like, okay, we can use that machine to test this. I love that.
Though it almost killed us when it was a sword swinging robot. And we thought, hey, what a great idea. We'll attach a hand so it slaps us. That it was a vigorous slap. It was a very vigorous slap of the machine. Your face was amazing.
Good times. Well, Todd, thank you so much for the question. And thank you, Mythfits. Keep those questions coming in and keep coming back being weird with us.
And if you're not already part of Band of Mythfits, come join us. Join our community, commercial-free extended episodes and bonus stuff that you're not going to see online. Tori and I like to, we're doing this even more than just the once a week release that we make. Stay weird, Mythfits. We love you.
Stay weird.
Pioneer.